Welcome to this podcast of The Secrets, the podcast for anyone who is serious about writing. The Secrets home can be found at www.stormwolf.com. For the next 15 minutes, we'll talk about writing and how to get you even closer to seeing your name on the spine of a book. Hello, I'm Michael A. Stackpole, a science fiction and fantasy writer, and I'm the host here at The Secrets. This is the third podcast of The Secrets. And as I've done in the past, in the first segment, I like to deal with what I refer to as the rules of writing. The rules of writing are fairly useful for beginning writers as a way to structure your work and figure out problems that you just want to avoid. And as a published writer, you can go back and you can use these as diagnostics to figure out why something isn't working. One of the biggest problems we have as fiction writers is that we have to create a believable world. Because we're inviting people in and we're trying to tell them, look, this world actually works. The characters are real, the events are real, the drama's real, all the emotions you feel should be real. So you want to have a world that lives and breathes. And one of the big problems with fiction is that all too often people create worlds that don't live and breathe. The worlds that just sort of stop doing anything outside eyeshot of the main characters. The way you avoid this is using continuity bolts, and that is the third rule of writing, using continuity bolts. What are continuity bolts? Continuity bolts are those familiar elements that run through stories over and again that make them seem real. If you think about your life when you wander around, you listen to the same radio station, you know who the DJs are, you tend to often go to the same restaurants, you have favorite places, you learn who the staff learns who you are, you have conversations, you build a world around you that's familiar and comfortable. And you have to do that for the reader, both because that's what the reader wants, and because that's what's natural for the characters that you have in your stories. And if the characters don't appear to be natural, then the story's not going to work at all. People like seeing the familiar, and using continuity bolts is fairly simple. Whether it is just having one or two restaurants where the characters tend to go over and again, whether the characters have favorite foods or favorite habits, all those normal aspects of human beings that we run into all the time. These are continuity bolts. You know, the fact is that when they call a cab, so they get the same cabbie from time to time. Not always, not to the point of straining credulity, but from time to time, this is what they get. Or they see a neighbor, and they relate to that neighbor. Continuity bolts help you fix pieces of the world. Continuity bolts also, as you use them, are very, very useful in putting together plot lines and expanding the world. If we take the example of a diner, and you have a waitress that the characters interact with over and over and over again through a series of stories, and you see the waitress there being single and then getting engaged. You know, perhaps you've seen her boyfriend coming in and talking to her. Then she's engaged. She's off on her honeymoon. She's pregnant. She's not there because she's had a child. Later on, she's not there because the child is ill. We learn horrible things or you know, the marriage breaks up and the father kidnaps the child. Depending on what kind of story you're telling, there are any number of points where your main character might be called upon to intervene in that life. You know, the kidnapping would be an obvious one for a detective story. There's any number of other ways that you could get those characters involved with each other. But this all makes the world real. When you think about it, the more we get to know people, we learn a lot about their lives. Sometimes we don't want to learn any of that, but we do, and that is what makes the world seem real for us. The other really huge benefit of using continuity bolts is that once you describe a place, you don't need to go back and describe it again. Once you've said, hey, Sam's Diner is, you know, looks like a railroad car, it was put up, the vinyl seats are cracked, you know, and the tables haven't been, tables have chipped formica and the floors have not been washed since 1957, that gives you a sense of the place. Why anyone would want to continue to eat there, anybody's guess. But the fact is that is part of what goes on. Anytime you go back, you only have to describe what's different. A new cook is there. Someone actually washed the floors. They got some new plates. There's a special in terms of food, or there's a new way that they're preparing something. You know, that's great. I am a huge fan of the writer Rex Stout, who did the Nero Wolfe mysteries, and he uses tons of continuity bolts, tons of things that you are familiar with. The fact is that the character Nero Wolfe has a daily schedule. He's in the orchid rooms twice a day. He doesn't leave his house. So there are all sorts of things that set up a structure of his world. You get familiar with it because it's a constant. And then the great thing is that when you break that constant, when Nero Wolfe has to leave his house, when Nero Wolfe decides to forego a session with the orchids, this is big news. It's a big surprise. And it makes the stories really memorable and really pop off the page. So look at finding common elements, realistic elements, and using them to bolt the pieces of your story together. It will help keep things very tight. It will also save you on words, which is especially important when you're dealing with short stories. And it will make your work seem far more realistic to your readers. After all, you're asking your readers to live with you in that world for the duration of the story. So you best give them a world that actually works. Welcome back to segment 2 here on The Secrets. This is a segment where I like to answer questions by authors, and you're welcome to send your questions in to thesecrets@stormwolf.com, and I will answer them as best I can. Secrets, of course, is a bi-monthly newsletter that I put out. That deals with a lot of the things we talk about here. If I use your question in there, I'll make sure you get a copy of one of those issues. And if you go to stormwolf.com, you can check out some free issues and think about subscribing to the newsletter. Since I don't have any questions in right now, I'm going to pick up on some of the questions that are fairly familiar from conventions and other times when I've been teaching. First, I would like to caution everybody that when you pick up a How to Write book or even listening to these podcasts, you go ahead and pick up one or more of the novels by the person who's written the book or the person who's instructing you on how to write and read it. One of the things that's really kind of weird about How to Write books or anyone instructing someone on writing is that you need to listen to their advice, look at what they're saying, and then apply it against their work to see if they're actually doing what they tell you to do. Sometimes writers are not even conscious of what they do. So listen to their advice, take their advice, but by all means, go ahead, pick up some of their books and just see if they, in fact, do what they tell you to do or if they're doing something else entirely. Now, you will learn from them one way or the other, but again, go to their books, check stuff out. One of the questions I get fairly often is, do you work from an outline? I do work from an outline. I work from an outline that will run roughly a paragraph per chapter, and that'll be, for a 100,000 word book, 200,000 word book. And if you're doing your first novel, don't go over 120,000 words. Try not to be under 90,000 words. That's basically what you're looking at, and your word processor will count for you. Otherwise, it's 4 double-spaced pages. Will make roughly 1,000 words. An outline is to a book what a road map is to a road trip. You can sit down with a map and you can draw a line from Phoenix to Chicago, just tracing all the roads you're going to take. But that's not your road trip. Your road trip is what happens. And very often in a novel, what happens is not what you have on the outline. 60% of the way through the book, you might have had a scene where this character was supposed to do something. And when you get there, you find that character doesn't want to do it. That character does something else. There's another solution to the problem. Why is that? It's because of a really cool thing. As you're writing the book, as you're putting little details down about the character is growing. The character is becoming far more real and taking on a real life in your mind. And that character may not be the same character that you had at the beginning. As well, certain secondary characters may grow up and may cause other things to happen in the story. And this shifts your whole emphasis. I have wrestled from time to time with sharp deviations from my outline. In the book I just finished and just turned into my editor, I made a note on my calendar that I actually considered killing a character in a particular chapter, and I wasn't supposed to. I hadn't intended to. But I thought about it very seriously and only refrained because I would have had to change too much stuff. And the character that I would have had to put into his place had not been introduced early enough in the novel series to make him make sense, to have risen to the heights he would have risen to. So even professional authors do, in fact, find their whole stories changing as they go along. This is a very good thing. You should work with it, and you will see through the progression of drafts, and as your work gets better and characters grow, that outlines will change. Don't be afraid of that. Embrace it. A story that stays the same from the outline to final output tends to be fairly static, fairly dry, and have very little life in it, and you don't want that. You want as much life as possible. I just mentioned drafts, and how many drafts do writers do? Everybody does a different number of drafts. Primarily, the way the process will work is you will do a first draft, and that's sort of getting the skeleton down. And in your second draft, you'll make sure to correct any skeletal problems, and you begin to layer the muscle in. And then in your third draft, you'll make all those little cosmetic changes, put the skin on, the hair, the makeup. So it's a natural process of sort of accreting details, cutting some stuff. Some people write long and cut. Other people write short and add. It's going to be whatever style you feel works best for you. How do you know which draft is the best? My feeling is this. Your last draft should be the draft where you're just making little tiny changes, little word choices, you know, barely cosmetic changes. Stop then. Send it off to an editor. Let them tell you what else to change. And in the future, we'll talk about how you find an editor, how you find a publisher, and how you actually get your book seen so that you have a chance of getting it published. Welcome back to the third segment of The Secrets. In this segment, I like to deal with a word or expression that is somewhat obscure, and this one comes from The Word Museum by Jeffrey K. Kirk again, and it is white eye. And this is military slang for a very strong and deleterious kind of whiskey, so called because its potency is believed to turn the eyes around in their sockets, leaving the whites only visible. Quite an image. And it's that sort of colorful language that makes fiction real and gives people a sense of what's really going on. If somebody was white-eye drunk, if you were to call them white-eye drunk, everybody would understand what's going on. So, think about playing with all those sorts of slang kind of things. Think about all the slang that we have for coins, you know, quarters, dimes, nickels, two bits. Those sorts of little details make worlds really hold together. I love doing slang, and I think it really enlivens a world. Certainly did a lot of slang with all of the Star Wars books, and even little bits like the term brain sweat, which I use fairly often here. Little made-up words that people understand, get your point across, and really show that you got a mastery of the world and mastery of the language, and that you deserve to be a writer. One quick note here. The Secrets will begin to diversify. I've just completed a long interview with author Aaron Alston, who's a good friend, and so we'll be having a second broadcast, which will be called The Secrets Interviews, and I hope to have interviews with more authors to get their take on writing and all the things that people who want to get into writing ought to know. So stand by for those. I'll have a master feed at the website, www.stormwolf.com, that will let you know how to get those broadcasts as well. This podcast is copyright 2005 by Michael A. Stackpole. We can be found on the web at www.stormwolf.com. I'd really appreciate it if you're enjoying these podcasts for you to go over to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for The Secrets and a review. And I'd like to thank Podcast Bunker for giving us a 5-star rating. That makes me very, very happy, and I'll do my best to make sure these podcasts are up to that standard in the future. Please do come to stormwolf.com and check out the free issues of The Secrets, the companion magazine to these podcasts. As well, please look for Secret Atlas from Bantam Books and Perchance to Dream from 5-star, as those are the books that pay my rent and make me able to do these broadcasts. I'll see you in a week. Good luck with your writing.